This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
There is no hell. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and I'd like to welcome you to Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. Hallelujah, there is no hell. I guess that's something to be happy about, huh?
I think so.
Or Hosanna, there is no heaven, maybe.
Wouldn't it be fun to turn on the TV on Sunday morning and have someone preach Hallelujah, there is no hell for a change?
Or that if there's a heaven, it's right here on earth. I'm Dan Barker.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and this is a group that I helped co-found as a college student with my mother, Ann Nicole Gaylor, who was the big founder of the group. So happy Mother's Day, Mom. The foundation went from a dining room organization with just 3 members to one that has nearly 14,000 nationwide today, making FFRF the largest free thought association in the entire North America. And we've been working very diligently to defend the constitutional principle of freedom from religion in our government.
And also to educate the public about the views of atheists and agnostics. On the state church front, we have back with us in the studio today Rebecca Kratz, who's our very busy and very productive staff attorney at the Freedom from Religion Foundation. Rebecca hasn't been on the show since, was it last January? And we're going to talk with her both about these National Day of Prayer violations and Freedom from Religion Foundation lawsuit, which is very, very timely this week, and a complaint with about the military.
The guest for the second half of Free Thought Radio is Jennifer Hecht. She's author of the book Doubt, A History, The Great Doubters and Their Legacy. So we've long admired Jennifer Hecht's work. We've never had the opportunity to meet her, and we're looking forward to getting acquainted.
Now, really big news this week, it's all over the internet, is a report by Al Jazeera about U.S. soldiers with military encouragement. They're spreading the Christian faith among Afghanistan's population. Al Jazeera ran a show that showed footage of military chaplains stationed in the U.S. airbase at Bagram with Bibles printed in the country's main languages of Pashto and Dari, and a lieutenant colonel telling soldiers that they have a responsibility to witness for Jesus Christ.
So we have a brief excerpt of that report by James Bays of Al Jazeera.
Dear Lord Jesus, just come to you in prayer.
They were on a mission, but it appears it was not just a military one. A group of evangelical Christians inside Bagram, one of the biggest U.S. bases in Afghanistan.
In Jesus Christ's name, pray. Amen.
Determined to spread the word in a way that's bound to cause deep concern to their political masters.
For the ministry and the work that's going on over here.
On the floor of the room, 2 sets of Bibles. The blue ones in Pashto, the green copies in Dari. The 2 main languages in this deeply conservative Islamic society. They had them specially printed and shipped to Afghanistan. What these soldiers have been doing may well be in direct violation of the U.S. Constitution, their professional codes, and the regulations in place for all forces in Afghanistan. There's no doubt these men knew the rules. These pictures were filmed about a year ago by documentary maker Brian Hughes, a former military man himself. He couldn't believe what he was seeing.
The only reason they would have these documents there is to distribute them to Afghan people, and I knew that that was wrong.
Our pictures show a thriving evangelical community at Bagram. This Sunday service is packed.
All of you, if you name the name of Christ, are commissioned to be witnesses for him.
The man giving the sermon, the chief of the chaplains in Afghanistan, tells the congregation, all of them servicemen and women, that they need to go on a recruiting drive for the faith.
The special forces guys, they hunt men. We do the same thing as Christians. We hunt people for Jesus. Get the hound of heaven after them. So we get them in the kingdom. That's what we do. That's our business.
One estimate suggests 60% of all military chaplains would identify themselves as conservative evangelical Christians. The exact line where evangelism ends and proselytizing begins is the subject of intense debate. But the distribution of Bibles in a place as politically sensitive as Afghanistan will be seen by many as crossing that line.
Well, I should think so. And let's bring on Foundation Attorney Rebecca Kratz. Rebecca, you've only been our staff since October, but you've already pursued major military state church violations. And let's first talk about the complaint. It's a fairly new complaint that you're pursuing over the distribution of Bibles by the U.S. Navy.
Well, hello. Thank you for having me back on. We received a complaint in January from a member in Missouri who was telling us that there is a church in Missouri, Revival Fire Ministries, that was having a fundraising drive so that they could send over 40,000 Bibles to troops serving overseas, particularly Iraq. And so they were going to send these Bibles via military transport to be airlifted to military bases over there. We sent a letter of complaint to the chaplain's office at the U.S. Navy, who was organizing this, and we did receive a response back after a few months.
Yeah, after a few months. It was a very discouraging response.
Right. It took about 3 months for them to respond, and they did say that they do transport Bibles with military transportation, and they said that they had to do that because the chaplaincy office exists to accommodate soldiers, and these donated Bibles were necessary for service members.
These Bibles are in English, then?
We don't know.
We don't know.
We don't know whether these are the same Bibles that are winding up in Afghanistan.
Right. We're actually trying to figure out if that's the same organization or if it's somebody new.
So could we call up the military and say, hey, could you ship our free thought literature over to the servicemen?
Well, that's actually one of the things that we want to do as a follow-up to their response to us. We want to send a letter asking, how do we go about donating our books to
and getting them airshipped by the military at taxpayer expense to free-thinking soldiers. And we know there are a lot of them. So you have to kind of stay tuned on that one. But, I mean, it is kind of outrageous, don't you think?
Yes.
I mean, this has gone beyond accommodation. Accommodation is allowing allowing religious groups to go in and distribute their books if they wish on their own dime. It's not the same thing as airlifting 40,000 Bibles.
Right. And one of the things that we had mentioned in our initial letter of complaint was that these churches should be finding their own way to ship the Bibles overseas.
Yes. My goodness. They raise enough money.
But how many of these Christian servicemen and women are going to not take their Bibles with them when they go over to Iraq?
If they're devoutly religious. Well, so we'll stay tuned on that complaint. We're going to do more on that. And then can you recap for listeners this very successful complaint that you brought earlier about a lot of prayer going on in Iraq?
Right. Back in November, we heard from a service member who's stationed over in Baghdad who told us that in his high-level army office, they had twice a day shift briefings. And at those shift briefings, they would always begin them with Christian prayer. He was very upset about this and complained, and we also sent a letter to Secretary Gates asking him to stop this practice. And
this was in November.
This was in November.
And you did get immediate confirmation, almost immediate, from our complainant that things had gotten better, right?
Right. He sent us an email about a month later saying that the twice daily prayers had stopped and they had been replaced with this moment in American history. And then we finally did receive word back from Secretary Gates, who also confirmed that this practice was unconstitutional and they had ordered that it be stopped.
So this is probably just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, we have a very big state church issue with the military.
But that is a victory.
Yes, very good victory. We have the infiltration of the U.S. military by evangelicals and fundamentalists who seem to view the enlisted as their missionary field, and they also view the Muslims in Afghanistan, in occupied countries, and Iraq as missionary prey.
Phil Zuckerman, who's a sociologist and author, has been a guest on our show. He just sent us a list of songs that atheists will like. And here's one that he likes a lot, sung and written by Ziggy Marley, the son of Bob Marley, which is relevant, I think, to today's topic.
In the name of God, you kill. In the name of your God. In the name of God, you conquered. In the name of your God. All religion should be wiped out. So that
that's a bit of Ziggy Marley, In the Name of God.
All religions should be wiped out so that we can just live. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio. We're going to keep talking with attorney Rebecca Kratz about the National Day of Prayer violations handled by the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And then our second guest is Jennifer Hecht, author of the fascinating book, Doubt, A History.
Hi, my name is Doug, and I'm from Eden Prairie, Minnesota, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you.
Here tonight like that, you believe in God with your mind, you may go to church, but you live as though God does not exist as far as you are concerned. And so you are an atheist in a sense.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. And no, that was not me preaching. That was Billy Graham preaching years ago, making an interesting comment that a lot of Christians are actually atheists. Well, yes, there are a lot of atheists who go to church. So come out of your closets, you free thinkers.
And we looked up this sermon by Billy Graham because as the Freedom From Religion Foundation's federal lawsuit against the National Day of Prayer has revealed, Congress passed a law creating this National Day of Prayer only because Billy Graham requested it. And that was back in 1952. And we talked about that lawsuit last week here on Free Thought Radio. And we'd like to take some credit for the fact that President Barack Obama, whom we are suing in part over this, stopped holding White House events for the religious right on the first Thursday of May, which is the National Day of Prayer.
We're sorry to announce, however, that Wisconsin's Governor Jim Doyle has issued a Day of Prayer proclamation. The Freedom From Religion Foundation is also suing Governor Doyle. The federal law mandates that the president issue such a proclamation, but governors don't have to. And it's interesting that the Wisconsin Governor's Office told the Associated Press that they are doing so again this year despite our lawsuit at the request of the Wisconsin chapter of the National Day of Prayer Task Force, which is part of the Focus on the Family, which is also being sued by the foundation.
Our foundation attorney, Rebecca Kratz, is still here in the studio, so let's talk some more about National Day of Prayer violations that you've been handling for the foundation. These have mostly been at the municipal level.
That's right. There are a lot of cities across the country that do National Day of Prayer activities, mostly in the form of mayor prayer breakfasts. And so we've been dealing with a lot of those types of complaints from our members. The first one is probably the most egregious from Largo, Florida. There, the city is actually hosting a mayor's prayer breakfast, and they are making tickets available only at City Hall. They're not making any qualms about the fact that they are the host of that event. After we sent a letter of complaint, it came out in the press that the Chamber of Commerce is also actually a co-sponsor. And so I think that we have been getting them to change their ways a little bit. The ACLU is also involved in that suit, and we're working together with them to try to get them to change it or even stop it for next year.
Or possibly, if they don't, to sue. Because
exactly.
We have some members in the area willing to be plaintiffs.
Right.
Now, where else?
We have also sent a letter to the mayor of Kaiser, Oregon. There, the city, along with the Chamber of Commerce, is holding a mayor prayer breakfast at City Hall on Thursday morning. And the city is advertising the breakfast. They have an invitation there on the city's website that shows prayer hands. And the prayer hands seem to be grasping a Christian cross. So we've sent a letter to them earlier this week and haven't received a response yet from them.
So, and that took place on Thursday, but maybe we can stop it for next year. Right. And then there was another really egregious case out of Texas.
That's right. In El Paso, Texas, the El Paso for Jesus is sponsoring a mayor prayer breakfast.
And that's the name of it, right?
That's the name of the group. That's right. But all of the promotional materials and the advertising materials for this event fail to mention that El Paso for Jesus is the sponsor. Most of the materials just say mayor prayer breakfast.
And I think the most shocking thing was that someone sent us a picture of the billboard promoting the mayor's prayer breakfast, and what's the phone number?
A 58 Jesus.
Huh. And the mayor is, is El Paso only for Christians? Is the mayor only representing Christians? What about Jews and non-believers and Hindus? And, you know, my goodness, this is kind of a primitive concept of separation of church and state.
So we're not complaining that the mayor can't attend a prayer breakfast, but the city cannot actually sponsor or officially be a part of it, right?
And also we...
And also organize or promote. They can be invited if a private religious organization or church is sponsoring it.
But we don't think it should have the mayor's name on it even, because that implies endorsement. And I also have a complaint with Tom Barrett, who is the very progressive mayor of Milwaukee, and he has something going. He had something going on Friday that was right after the National Day of Prayer for faith leaders, so we're trying to stop that.
We've never had a mayor attend our annual non-prayer breakfast yet, have we?
No, we've been turned down a lot.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Giller for Free Thought Radio. Thanks for joining us, Rebecca, and for all your hard work. Free Thought Radio will be right back after this break to learn more about the history of doubt, the famous skeptics and scoffers who have moved civilization forward, from the author Jennifer Michael Hecht.
This is Richard Dawkins, author of The God Delusion, and you're listening to Free Thought Radio.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Giller with Dan Barker. We have on the phone with us from Brooklyn, the author of Doubt, A History, The Great Doubters and Their Legacy of Innovation from Socrates and Jesus to Thomas Jefferson and Emily Dickinson.
Jennifer Michael Hecht is the author of many award-winning books of history, poetry, and philosophy. Her 2003 book, Doubt, A History, demonstrates a long, strong history of religious doubt from the origins of written history to the present day all over the world. Her book, The End of the Soul, Scientific Modernity, Atheism, and Anthropology, won the Phi Beta Kappa Society's prestigious Ralph Waldo Emerson Award. Jennifer Hecht's first poetry book, The Next Ancient World, won The Next Ancient World. What's that going to be like? It won the Poetry Society of America's 2002 Norma Farber First Book Award. Her most recent poetry book, Funny, won the University of Wisconsin's 2005 Felix Pollack Poetry Prize, and Publishers Weekly called Funny one of the most original and entertaining books of the year. Her books, her book reviews appear in the New York Times and the Washington Post. Her newest book, The Happiness Myth, and we'll have to ask Jennifer if she's happy about that book. The Happiness Myth was published by Harper One in 2007. Jennifer Hecht teaches at the New School University, lives in Brooklyn with her husband, John, and their two children. Welcome to Free Thought Radio, Jennifer.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Wow, what a pleasure to hear your voice. Do you? Your webpage shows you with purple hair. Do you still have purple hair today?
I don't at the moment. I decided to take a break from being a spectacle. It was fun for
Well, it matched your shirt.
It sure did. Yeah, it made it easy to put on snappy outfits.
Well, we're pleased to meet you via radio and have admired your book since it came out in 2003. And I wanted to ask you, what was the genesis of your book? What prompted you to do this research and to write this book?
The book Doubt.
Doubt.
There are a couple ways to answer the question, but the most straightforward is that I had written The End of the Soul through, that was my that originated in my PhD thesis. And as I was writing that and turning it into a book, that book's about a specific group of atheists, I really realized that there wasn't a book out there that I could trust about atheism and religious doubt. Either they claimed too much for the atheists or they claimed too much for the believers. Everybody just gets overzealous, and I wanted to make sure there was a book that I could trust, that I knew where everybody stood, because I really wanted to know.
You write in the introduction that you always notice doubt out of the corner of your eye as you were reading other history.
Yeah.
And you were surprised to discover that, as you say, scholars of every period have found doubters. And when these are looked at head on, a strong, cohesive history of doubt appears.
Yeah, that was the most remarkable aspect of the experience. So there were many, many aspects of writing doubt changed me. But to realize that the doubters in each generation were well aware of the doubters who had come before, that there was a legacy and a story that people in the know had collected and become familiar with in every century for the last at least 2,500 years. Each century has written histories of doubt. They're not that useful to us now because they almost need to be translated, even if they're in English. But these books were written, and in every age, people looked back to Epicurus. They looked back to Ecclesiastes in the Bible. They looked back to the Job story in the Bible. They looked back to Marcus Aurelius and Democritus, and they cited the other explanations for the world, and they loved their heroes, they marked their calendars when Bruno was burned at the stake in 1600. They noticed that, and when he pushed that cross away as he burned, we've had as many saints and seers, heroes and martyrs as any other faith. Indeed, more than most any other faith, because we've been around longer.
A kind of sacred or non-sacred history of doubt and free thought.
Yeah.
You go back to 600 BC. You start with the Greeks and the ancient Jews. You have a chapter, Doubt in Asia, going back to Buddha.
Do you want to talk a little bit about Buddha?
Well, the earliest doubt that I found on record, though I found indications of it earlier, the earliest doubt I found that was clear, precise, on record, that you could read it today and say, oh, this person's an atheist and a really interesting thinker, that's 600 BC in ancient India. The Carvaka, with a C, Carvaka. This was a group of people who the Buddha hadn't even come around yet. They were disbelieving in Hinduism, and they said karma is a joke to keep us controlled. The priests are just making money off us. If you thought burning your parents' bodies sent them to heaven, why don't you do it while they're still alive and give them an express trip? They said if a mind could exist without a body, mangoes would hang in the air without trees, but they don't. And they also said, nature is sufficient. Look how nature reproduces patterns. It's sufficient to make the world.
Did any of these people get in trouble?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. most of the people in my book, Doubt a History, a great many of them, all of their work is preserved by their enemies in polemics. That is, all their original work was burned.
Like Hypatia. You want to talk a little bit about Hypatia?
Sure, she was obviously killed. She was really the last ancient world philosopher, and she was greatly, greatly admired and killed, really not because she was a woman and not because her father was the present librarian of Alexandria, but because she was a philosopher, because she was teaching that the world makes sense on its own, and when we don't understand it, that's a time for reflection, not invention.
Think how much was lost when that library was destroyed.
Well, if I do that, I'll be clutching my stomach on the floor. So I know you got to let it come and go. I think of what the Buddha would say when the Taliban burst up those Buddha statues, and I say the Buddha would have said, forget about it. It comes and goes. So I try to sit with him. But when I tell everybody, when I wrote the chapter on Buddhism in doubt. It took me three times as long as any other chapter because the Buddha kept telling me not to do anything.
Well, now you have a chapter, When in Rome, in Doubt.
Yeah.
What about the Roman doubters?
Well, the Romans are actually one of the most beautifully literary doubters. The Greeks had completely obliterated every aspect of theism, certainly every aspect of theism that's in any way anthropomorphized. You know, they would still use the possibility of some kind of energy source to, you know, they would ask questions that could sound like the Big Bang or some kind of energy source from out there. But the Romans were in possession of this material. So they sort of had a leaping off point, and they wrote, you know, Marcus Aurelius and Lucretius are probably the two texts that I would send you to save your life.
Well, Lucretius is very readable today, isn't
yeah.
he? I mean,
yeah, beautiful and smart and creative and comforting, truly comforting. Yeah, no one beats Marcus Aurelius for that. You know, that's another of the things I was doing with Tao to History. I wanted to make a compendium of the best advice. I didn't really go into it to do that. I was shocked by how much the history of atheism is not much about negation. Most people say, okay, I don't believe that, and then they do move on to try to think how to be a human being in this strange mortal condition. And they come up with wonderful ways of remembering how to be at peace and remembering our finer moments. And Marcus Aurelius is one of those people who really, you know, he doesn't say there is no God. He says, look, either there's a God and everything's all right, or much more likely, it's all chance. And that means all you have to do is stop clinging to your ideas. Go with the universe. Let it happen. Everything is change. Everything will change. Don't let it defeat you. Ride it. And he's just got beautiful, you know, where it says other people say, to ask God for help. You know, he says, look, if you got to ask God for something, ask just for strength, because you already have the strength and you can do it yourself. So, you know, he says, if you're scared about the future, remember that your brain's got you through everything up until now, and they'll get you through the future too.
So doubt is not just a negative fatalism. It's sort of the, I guess, the roots of humanism, a positive moral outlook on the world then.
Absolutely, yeah. There, of course, are some negative moral responses to doubt, and I think we favor the other ones in part because there are more. Most of the texts that I found that rejected religion were actually very optimistic and happy in their own way. But you can see the sadness in Ecclesiastes, even though that book of the Bible will tell you, you know, everything is in vain and there's no rhyme or reason to anything. The battle's not to the, you know, the race isn't to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, but time and chance happen to all of them. Hobbes, we don't think of Hobbes as a great atheist, but my goodness, you read the Leviathan and you read other chapters than the ones professors usually assign, and there are more chapters about the ridiculousness of religion than about government. And, you know, in those histories of doubt I mentioned, they almost always just included a full chapter from the Leviathan because Hobbes was so funny and interesting about atheism. But because he's a conservative, he's understood as a political conservative because he thought we were better off with government, no matter how harsh, because without it, life was nasty and brutish and short. We'd kill each other. That's what we understand as a conservative position. And I think we forget about a great many conservative doubters because they don't quite fit into our understanding.
We will get back to the conservative doubters and maybe a quick look at the Middle Ages to today when we come back with the last half of Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker. We're talking with Jennifer Hecht, and we'll be right back.
Francisco Aguilar. I come originally from Argentina. I hear him Free Thought Radio, and I am glad that you are here to be able to give us a voice. Thank you.
Welcome
If you don't believe in God, or if you have a problem with organized religion, there is a new radio show just for you. Free Thought Radio.
This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker. We're back for our final segment. I'm here with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we have on the phone author Jennifer Michael Hecht with us from New York. She's the author of the book. She's authored many books, but we're talking today about the book Doubt, A History, The Great Doubters and Their Legacy of Innovation, From Socrates and Jesus to Thomas Jefferson and Emily Dickinson.
And Jennifer, I'm really glad that you include Emily Dickinson even right there in the title. We have a poem by Emily on bus signs right now.
Oh, I saw that. That's so beautiful.
And you want to talk just a tiny bit about why you put her right there in the title?
Well, yeah, I think that what I've come to believe is that art is a profoundly sufficient and generative focus for those of us who don't go towards religion. Science has been the classic alternative, and while I love science, I really trust art more. If you love the Renaissance, you probably wouldn't want to use their toilet paper or their doctors, but the art still works, and the love poetry still works. There's something human that's... I don't believe in God, which means I believe that humanity invented morality, and I'm very impressed, and I want to know more about our best, and I don't want to lie to myself about it, so I try really hard to walk that line.
And her poems are one way of looking at it, not precisely. So directly, but artistically.
Precisely. I believe that she was a doubter to the point of atheism, though she didn't have a reason to make that clear line. But
and that evolved.
What?
She wrote some conventional poetry, but that idea evolved, didn't it?
That's right. I feel that she was one of ours, one of our great doubters, and she puts things in terms that you could read 10 philosophy books and not get as much out of one of her lines sometimes.
Our sign, her poem is, "Faith is a fine invention when gentlemen can see, but microscopes are prudent
in an emergency."
In an
right?
emergency, yeah.
Yeah.
And that sure says a lot, doesn't it?
It sure does. It sure does. But and she's just as subtle when she's really looking inside her own heart.
Now, we talked about the ancient world, and we've only got 3 minutes left, so let's talk about the Enlightenment and current doubters, if we can do that in 3 minutes.
Sure. All I'll say is that the 19th century was an extraordinary moment of doubters and atheists really trying to do the work of changing the world to make it a better place, and they articulated all the time that they were doing it because they knew that the world was really in their hands. And so there were no more excuses. The 20th century is such an explosion of different kinds of doubt and different kinds of atheism that with that chapter I really allowed myself to follow all sorts of different kinds of people and to talk about, you know, Jackie Mason's statements about atheism and mention Penn and Teller and sort of run around a lot. But the beauty is that everybody is always still dependent on these past texts, always adding new stuff to it. It's an amazing story. It's sad to me that the 20th century has mostly lost the story, and we lost it because of communism and the American fear of it in the 50s. It's in the 50s that we put in God We Trust on the money, and we put God in the pledge.
And the National Day of Prayer.
And when you read the congressional hearings, that it's specifically against atheist Russia. So I think that we put up a political kind of a wall in the middle of the 20th century, and we haven't been able to see over it to see how incredible the period even just before it was for atheists. And right now we desperately need to know our history. I get emails all the time from people, and they say they read the book, and they feel profoundly less lonely. Because we really have an amazing history.
The book is called Doubt, A History, and it's 500 pages without the notes. It's quite, I guess you could call this a tome, right?
It's a big book,
a very
yeah.
friendly tome. And at the end, you say that very thing toward the end of the book. You say, the only thing doubters really need that believers have is a sense that people like themselves have always been around and that they are part of a grand history.
Right.
I love that line, the grand history of doubt.
And also we've done a lot of the fights already. A lot of the stuff that Hitchens says in his book or a lot of these arguments were laid out BC. We don't really need to argue them all over again. What we need to do is remember who said them first, point to them, make it so that our community knows the stuff, so we can keep arguing more advanced stuff. That's how knowledge works. If we don't know our history, we just keep doing the same revelation over and over.
We're so grateful you wrote Doubt, a History. Do you have a website?
I do. My main website is just my name, JenniferMichaelHeck.com. And if you click talk to the author, it goes straight to my regular email. And I'm always happy to hear from people. I also have a poetic website and stuff, but you'll find everything from JenniferMichaelHeck.com.
Thank you, Jennifer, for being with us on the show today.
Thanks so much for having me.
We also want to thank our producer, Dan Ginsberg. Go to ffrf.org/radio to hear all the past shows.
And join us. Call 1-800-335-4021. Help us with our litigation. We'll be back next week for more Rational Radio.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, ffrf.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.